The Moving Iron Podcast is brought to you by these great sponsors. Are you looking to value your equipment more accurately, target the right buyers and close more deals, reach your ideal customer? Then look no further. Fusible isn't just about ag data, it's about action. Our best-in-class solution empowers you to value your equipment accurately, make informed decisions, and find the perfect prospects. Ignite your dealership's growth at fusible.com/movingiron-podcast. Out in the field, every decision counts. You wouldn't plant without testing your soil, so why would you prospect blind? Introducing EDA, your one-stop shop for ag equipment intel. EDA goes beyond specs and prices. You get deep dive data on every piece of equipment, like UCC filings that help track ownership changes and uncover potential sales leads, D&B firmographics, which help you understand the financial health and buying power of potential customers, market trends that help you stay ahead of the curve, and insights on equipment demands and pricings. With EDA, you're not just looking at data, you're seeing opportunity. You find the right buyer, sell smarter, and build lasting relationships. Visit edadata.com for your free demo and unlock the power of knowledge. For over 80 years, Iron Solutions has been your go-to data source for ag dealers, lenders, and manufacturers. Get powerful appraisal and value forecasting tools that fuel profitable decisions anytime, anywhere. Get your free demo at ironsolutions.com. Iron Solutions, confidence in every click. Today, there are many ways to finance ag equipment, but nobody delivers simple, fast, or flexible financing like AgDirect. Learn more about your options to buy, lease, and refinance equipment at agdirect.com. Valley Transportation has been hauling ag and construction equipment across the country for the past 33 years. Call Parker at 800-657-4910 for all your trucking needs. At Valley Transportation, our goal is to help you reach yours.
When you partner with Axon, you immediately gain access to a full range of products and solutions designed to meet the complex needs of today's grower. We carry all major brands and sizes of tires and wheels. We specialize in large diameter wheels for large equipment. We have one of the largest OEM replacement wheel inventories in North America. Known for extreme flotation setups, duals, and triples, we have wheels for all makes and models of tractors, sprayers, combines, and grain carts. If we don't have the wheel in stock, we'll custom build, sandblast, and paint in-house. There isn't a more vast inventory in North America dedicated to helping dealers move more iron. With facilities on the West Coast and in the heart of the Midwest, leverage our 230,000 square feet of indoor inventory to solve any problem a grower may have. Move more iron with Axon.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving iron time and time again. You'll find us here, Moving Iron.
Hello and welcome to Moving Iron Podcast. Mark, this is Sean Hackett. This edition of the Moving Iron Podcast is brought to you by Fusible, Moving Iron's official data partners. Fusible, the home of Iron Solutions and EDA data. Ignite your dealership's growth at fusible.com. Sean Hackett is with Hackett Financial out of Boca Raton, Florida. It's nice enough to come on and talk about what's happening in the world of commodities and other related subjects. Sean, how are you doing this morning, bud?
I'm doing really, really good. Really
good. Awesome. So we've talked about this a few times on here, and going back almost a year now, when we started seeing some chinks in the armor of the Brazilian crop and various things that popped up there along the way. China kind of went on a buying spree about 6 months ago or so, locked in some stuff. And I read another article this morning where they are looking to boost their overall amount of grain storage and edible oils and those kind of things by 8.1% over last year. And last year was a record year for them as far as what they bought. Not necessarily from the United States, but just from around the world, Brazil mainly, what you saw there. So I guess, Sean, as you look at this and you've seen kind of this thing kind of steamrolling up, what are your thoughts there? And what do you think are some of the driving factors behind this?
But whether they're actually stockpiling or not, no one really will ever know. That's what they're saying. I think they prefer to say stockpiling because it says, you know, they're not doing it because they need to. They're doing it because they want to. If they are actually told people just buying what they need, there would be panic in the market. And then you wouldn't be able to buy corn for 4.25, 4.5. You'd be paying, you know, substantially higher if they said that they really screwed. I personally don't think that they're stockpiling. I personally think that if you look at the weather they have had the last 2 or 3 years, you know, the crops have been very, very poor for rice, wheat, everything. And I just think they just don't have enough. But either way, whatever the reason, you know, if this announcement is their way of saying they're going to start, you know, getting back to buying a lot of grain again, and they show that and we see that, then, you know, that's one of the narratives that's been crushing the grain markets here the last few months, is that, you know, China was falling into the economic abyss and that we wouldn't see their demand rebound. And if that's changed and we see evidence that has changed, obviously that would be a big reason to think speculators might start to get a little weak in the knees by remaining so extremely short the market at this early in the Northern Hemisphere growing season, which has barely even begun. So.
Right. Okay. All right. So a few other things as we look at some of that stuff as it plays out. One of the articles that jumped out at me this morning was, you know, Australia is expecting a bigger than normal 24-25 wheat crop as their weather starts to improve. So obviously Australia is one of the largest wheat producers in the country or in the world. I don't know whether they like 4 or 5 or something like that, on the overall producers out there. So I guess as you're looking at current supply from the January USDA report we saw there, and then how this would play into that, your thoughts on that, Sean?
Well, I mean, production, the USDA and all, you know, we pretty much have decent production there. They've had some rains that have fallen, kind of unusual. As we've talked about, this El Nino has been very not atypical El Nino, not really your normal cold weather pattern. It was very, very weak. We didn't get the atmospheric response. And normally you have a drought in Australia, but they've had considerable rains in the right areas where they grow wheat. So they're going to have a decent crop, but the numbers are already high. I mean, we already have pretty good expectations for wheat there. So that's, I don't think there's really a big change to that. Other than I think a lot of people thought they might have a reduction because of El Nino. It's just clearly not going to happen because this El Nino just really, it just didn't create the atmospheric response that we normally would see. And so, you know, they got a pass on this one from usually what they experience, which is considerably tougher conditions to grow wheat. But I don't really think it changed. I mean, we're talking about a wheat market that's lost almost 70% of its value. I don't think at these price levels, you know, that's going to change the narrative here at this price level. I think the demand will be plenty strong to overcome whatever Australia, you know, essentially looking at a repeat what they did last year. So I don't see that being a major bearish factor in the market. It's not a bullish factor, but it's certainly not an additional bearish factor. So
we haven't talked about rice for a while. We're talking about wheat. Those are the two main food staples as far as grains go across the globe. I guess talk a little bit about the rice market and what you see happening there, Sean.
For the second year in a row, if you look at the U.S. rice futures curve, the nearby, which is, let's say, the July contract, the old crop, is trading at a near historic premium to the new crop, let's say September, November. $4 differential between the two. Same thing happened last year, by the way. So what's going on here is that the market keeps trading rice as if there's plenty. And then as the old crop gets to, you know, where the buyers and the sellers are meeting, they're finding that the supply isn't there, not only domestically, but also internationally. And so I think that this incredible premium that we're seeing for U.S. rice prices relative to deferreds is telling you that we have a rice shortage. And, and part of that is because of the La Nina weather we had last year in India and Thailand. And, of course, the rice ban that India has put in place. If we're moving towards La Nina from El Nino, weather should improve for the back half of the monsoon season for India and Thailand, but the front half could still be challenging for them weather-wise. And so I think that if we're thinking about the rice market and we're already in a old crop supply pinch, any kind of bad start to the Thailand and the Indian rice crop, you know, could be met, but with a final, you know, potential surge to the upside before the good rains come and production looks better, and maybe India thinks about maybe selling a little bit of rice if they think they're going to have a big crop. I mean, you know, I don't know yet if they're going to do that, but certainly I think that risks still remain, at least heading into early summer if we get off to a slow start in Asia. Right now, the inversion from the U.S., this inversion is telling how tight the Western Hemisphere rice supply is. Brazil had a terrible rice crop. Paraguay had a terrible rice crop. Western supplies are razor thin, and we know Asian supplies are razor thin. So it's a tight market, and I don't think the market's going to give up the ghost to the downside until it's certain that India and Thailand can deliver bigger crops. And we're really not going to be able to make that determination until at least August or September. And I do think that El Nino will have a lag. There'll be some kind of a lag effect, at least in Asia, there will be a lag effect. And then we'll still see, I think, some challenging weather to start off the situation. So, but it's just interesting, though. I mean, for most people have been bearish U.S. rice, thinking there's too much supply. You know, now we have this $4 premium, which is telling you there is no supply. They're desperately trying to get this physical supply out of the hands of the U.S. farmer, and they're not being very successful. And it just goes to show you how a lot of times the market tries to force one narrative, but then the real market eventually tells you who's boss.
Right. Okay. So I was kind of looking at this the other day because somebody brought it up at a meeting I was at, and I hadn't really thought much of it, and kind of really hadn't really paid close attention to it. So, but you know, we talk about cotton on here from time to time, and what that looks like and how that works. Back early November, cotton prices are about 75 cents. Today, cotton's trading from just about a dollar, right, give or take. You know, I think today it's down a little bit, kind of getting beat around, but it's still like
it hit a dollar last week. I think we're down like 94, 95 cents. But yeah, and it's had a big rally, and we've been bullish cotton, as you know. We've been talking about that. There's not a lot of supply. If any demand came for it, we immediately have a shortage, and of course, Chinese demand shock. I thought they were going to disappear on the earth. Somehow they need a whole bunch of cotton, and the market's in a scarcity trade right now. Total supply scarcity trade. Moving into the old crop, desperately not trying to get buy acres for the U.S. Planting season. We had no demand and a ton of supply just a few months back. Once again, the bearish narrative on China was wrong again. And we've seen a run-up. So I believe the grain markets are going to show similar behavior, in that the idea that there's no demand, there's not going to be demand, and the supplies are ample, we believe that is a gross overstatement of the truth, and the cash market and the old crop is going to tell you before too long that the grain markets have mispriced grains relative to the China's going to fall into the abyss and never buy corn again from anybody. And so these are the rice, and especially cotton, is a great example of how the real market eventually forces the financial markets to comply with reality.
Right. Okay. So we're getting close to that time frame here in March, where we're starting to see the that crop acreage planted. Crop acreage report, the planned one that comes out, where everyone's kind of filled out a survey and they kind of guess, and it's rarely right. But I guess as you look, Sean, as you're taking a look at what are some of the areas where you think, hey, you know, maybe corn could lose some acres, or maybe soybeans could gain some acres, cotton, those kind of things. Like, as you look at the world that we're in right now, what do you think? How do you think it's going to play out this year? You think it'll be a similar pattern to what we saw last year? What's your thoughts there?
Well, there's absolutely no way that with the high cost of capital, with the very, very low reference price for crop insurance, for corn, with razor thin or no margin on the farm, with banks extremely nervous, there is absolutely no way that fringe acres are going to get planted this year for corn. Not a chance. First of all, the crop, you don't get the big yields on the fringe acres. And if you have weather problems, you get really, really low yields at a time where yields are tough, even if you had a good crop.
Right.
And it's an expensive crop to put down. It's just not going to happen. You know, the last 3 years we maxed out fringe acres because it was so profitable. All the fringe, yeah, the core acres in Illinois and Iowa, sure, they're going to go for corn because it can still work for them. But the Dakotas, you know, the western parts of Nebraska and in the areas of Kansas, you know, the fringe acres, it's just not going to get planted. No way. When you start worrying how many acres that could be, you know, I mean, we could be looking at, we think we're not going to plant more than 90 million acres of corn. I'm trying to remember what we planted last year, and I don't recall offhand, but I think it was close to 90 or 95, something like that. I just don't remember offhand, but I don't think we're going to plant more than 90 million acres of corn this year. And once you set that, yes, 94 Casey.
Million.
94 million. I think we're going to be down 4 million acres, give or take, when it's all said and done. And one of the big problems last year, Casey, even though our yields were below trend, we just planted too many corn acres and we still had a big crop because of that. You plant 90 million acres, take 10% off because, you know, there's always 10% that gets zeroed out in most years. So your actual harvested acres, you know, are closer to 80, 81, and you start running, even if we have, let's say, another year, we have 175 plus or minus, it's a dramatic reduction in production just on that alone, 1 year over next, at a time that we expect to see significant increase in demand for corn, not only because corn's cheaper than it was the last few years, but also because of the short crop that Brazil is going to have and the need to replace those lost exports with exports from the U.S. So when I look at that, that's a pretty exciting proposition to me. Now, if we have a more protracted crop problem, which we could have, and we've talked a lot about the 24-25 holding greater elevation for a higher order crop problem, you know, something more than, you know, 175 plus or minus, which we've been doing for the last 3 or 4 years. I mean, if we're down just 10% below trend, Casey, you'd be looking at a yield, you know, you'd be looking at a yield of 162, 165. And that wouldn't be a huge crop problem. That would be a bad crop. It'd be worse than we've experienced in the last 3 years, but that's not a major crop problem. That's a bad crop, but that's not a major crop. A major crop problem is 20 to 30% down on yields. So a 10% reduction in corn yields, which would be a bad crop, but not terrible, not the worst we've ever seen, against a 4 million reduction in acres, slides out. We'd run out of corn, just like that. And the 2 billion bushel carryouts that everyone claims is this massive, huge Kilimanjaro of it's just 30 years ago, 2 billion bushel of corn relative demand was substantial. Today, it's more than we've had. It is enough corn, but it's not a huge amount of buffer to offset anything. And so when I look at all that, Casey, you know, That's an exciting proposition for corn. Now, where are those acres going to go if they're lost? I think overall total planted acres are going to be down. So if you look at all the acres the U.S. plants, everything, whatever they, you know, every single thing they plant, the USDA will come up with a total planted acres number of sorghum and milo and corn and soy. That total number is going to be down because there's going to be some acres we are not going to plant with where prices currently are. We're not going to plant them. To row crops. So that's that. So where are these acres going to go? Certainly cotton is a profitable crop. We're going to get a lot more corn acres. Certainly rice is a profitable crop. We're going to plant more rice acres. You know, we're going to plant more things like oats, which are very inexpensive to plant relative to other row crops. We're going to plant more soybeans. You know, soybeans is a much cheaper crop to plant than and we have the prospects for better domestic demand, as we continue to push the renewable diesel trend here going forward, that, you know, we're going to need more and more of it for domestic demand than not. And so, you know, I just think corn's the big loser here. I think corn is the big loser here from what I can see. Everyone's going to try to do everything they can not to plant corn because it just doesn't pencil out. And it's a huge capital outlay at a time that everyone is looking to better manage their cash resources. It just doesn't make any sense that we're going to see, you know, the planters rolled for all kinds of corn acres, unless we have absolutely picture perfect ideal weather like the likes I've never seen before. If we had that, maybe we could sneak in an extra million. But I don't see that happening either, because as you know, a cold, wet May is what we're forecasting, and that's not going to allow for that kind of a growing season from start to finish.
Right. Okay. That's what I thought you were going to say. So we're right there together. That's what I look at when I hear what, you know, people talk about some of these areas where, you know, hey, where do I have the right amount of irrigation? Do I have the right amount of this or that other thing? You know, corn is always the one that keeps getting brought up in that conversation. So,
well, I mean, look at weather. I mean, soybeans are more forgiving.
Right.
You can go through a lot of hot, dry, you can go through July, and it's just even in 2012, the last time we had a major crop problem, it still performed considerably better. It was a horrible crop, by the way. Okay. Definitely one of the worst ever. But in terms of its performance relative to corn yields, it still performed much, much better. So if you say, okay, let's say I believe Sean is right on one of the, you're going to have a tough go at it. La Nina's coming back, Leisberg cycle, all this stuff. Soybeans is going to give you a better shot of still coming away with a better overall yield relative to average versus corn, which could be catastrophically low, like we saw in 2012. On top of putting just too much money on the ground, and the bankers are just not going to fund it. The bankers are going to force you to just look, we're not funding. Unless your ground is core, high yielding ground that can produce 250, 280, you know, high yielding ground, we're not supporting that. We're not giving you money for that. They're going to force it. It's just no doubt in mind that's going to be happening here. So when I look at that, you know, it says, you know, that the corn market should be pretty friendly here, because once you set that acreage number and it's too low, very, very hard to have a big crop, no matter how it turns out. Just like last year, once you set the high acreage number, it's really, really hard to take it back, you know, unless you have a major crop problem. So that's where, you know, that's where the mix is this year. Last year was exactly opposite. Corn was just immensely profitable. Everyone had a couple of years of huge equity bills in their businesses. We love to plant corn in this country. Go for it. And they planted row to row, every corner they could find. It was just one of those years. You know, we just planted everything, pretty much everything we could. Yep. Not this year. Yep. So,
yeah, it was when I looked up here. That was the third largest corn crop, planted corn crop in the United States since 1944. So,
yeah,
it's a big one. All right,
it was.
Good stuff. Good, folks want to reach out to you and get more information about what you're doing at Hackett Financial, what's the best way to do that?
Our website is Hackett, H-A-C-K-E-T-T, advisors.com. We have a Twitter page, at Faridex, F as in Frank, E-R-I-D-E-X 11. And we also have a LinkedIn page that from time to time we put some of our outlooks on weather, on cycle statistics, to see how we look at the world in agriculture. Might be of value to those that watch your show.
So with that, I'm Casey Seymour with Moving Iron Podcast. You can find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Moving Iron LLC. Go to LinkedIn at Moving Iron Podcast. Check out the YouTube channel, which is the Moving Iron Podcast YouTube channel. Go to TikTok and Snapchat as well as Moving Iron Podcast. You can find that information there. Got a brand new website up. Go check that out at MovingIronLLC.com. You can find everything Moving Iron related there, with all the information for the Moving Iron Summit coming up here in Nashville, Tennessee, November 4th through the 6th. That information will be up there here directly as far as how to get registered for that, and you can sign up then. Also, started a new thing with Successful Farming. I do a podcast for them. Me and Aaron Finn will do a podcast with them, and I write a couple articles for them, so you might check that out over there at agriculture.com. You can see that there as well. So with that, I'm Casey Seymour with Sean Hackett. Squeak smart, folks. The Moving Iron Podcast is brought to you by these great sponsors. Are you looking to value your equipment more accurately, target the right buyers and close more deals, reach your ideal customer? Then look no further. Fusible isn't just about ag data. It's about action. Our best-in-class solution empowers you to value your equipment accurately, make informed decisions, and find the perfect prospects. Ignite your dealership's growth at fusible.com/movingiron-podcast. Out in the field, every decision counts. You wouldn't plant without testing your soil, so why would you prospect blind? Introducing EDA, your one-stop shop for ag equipment intel. EDA goes beyond specs and prices. You get deep dive data on every piece of equipment, like UCC filings that help track ownership changes and uncover potential sales leads, D&B firmographics, which help you understand the financial health and buying power of potential customers, market trends that help you stay ahead of the curve, and insights on equipment demands and pricings. With EDA, you're not just looking at data, you're seeing opportunity. Find the right buyer, sell smarter, and build lasting relationships. Visit edadata.com for your free demo and unlock the power of knowledge. For over 80 years, Iron Solutions has been your go-to data source for ag dealers, lenders, and manufacturers. Get powerful appraisal and value forecasting tools that fuel profitable decisions anytime, anywhere. Get your free demo at ironsolutions.com. Iron Solutions, confidence in every click. Today, there are many ways to finance ag equipment, but nobody delivers simple, fast, or flexible financing like AgDirect. Learn more about your options to buy, lease, and refinance equipment at agdirect.com. Valley Transportation has been hauling ag and construction equipment across the country for the past 33 years. Call Parker at 800-657-4910 for all your trucking needs. At Valley Transportation, our goal is to help you reach yours. This podcast is proudly provided by Axon, helping dealers move more iron for the past 100 years. Find out more at axontire.com. Move more iron with Axon.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving iron time and time again. You'll find us here. Moving.